All right, folks, this is Todd Wilson with the Lane 8 BMX podcast, and I have a gentleman on here. Well, I actually got to know him. I recognized him through a bit of controversy that he had nothing to do with at Grands last year. And I reached out to him, and then we started talking back and forth in direct messaging on Facebook and Instagram. And today I got Tom Johnson on here. How you doing, Tom?
I'm doing well, man. Thanks for having me.
Good. Thank you. Thank you. I think the did you race today already?
I didn't. They got canceled.
Was it rain?
Yeah, it's supposed to get rained. It hadn't rained yet, but they canceled anyway. So, yeah.
Not bad. Okay, you're a Florida guy. You live in, I think it's Palm.
Palm Coast.
Palm Coast. That's right. I should know that. Actually, I should know that.
It's about 20 minutes north of Daytona. Daytona is my home track.
Yep.
So, John Ryan, T.O. over there, real good dude. Great track.
Yes, I've raced when I first moved to Florida the first time. I raced a lot at Daytona, actually. Nice. And then I know that it kind of shut down for a little bit. And then there was a new person that came to take over it. And then there was a track rebuild.
Correct.
So how do you like it from, let's say, from the past to the present? What do you think? And what's the improvements?
So, yeah, when the old TO left, I won't mention names, but he kind of left it in disarray. And Bill Henry jumped in, and that's Ty Henry's dad, and really started putting together a team and great volunteers and whatnot. And, I think I was a TO for a while when I lived in Connecticut, and it can be challenging. And I know Bill, it was pretty rough on him. And then, so he kind of gave it up to John Ryan, and John, and Bill still helps out, but John's done a great job. He's got a great group of volunteers. Always could use more volunteers, but they've done such a fantastic job on the track. And the difference is night and day. I mean, I remember racing a national in Daytona in the early 90s. And from what it was then versus what it is now, it's just, like I said, night and day. Yeah.
Night and day. Not bad. Not bad. Tell me this. What's the racing days for Daytona? I know it's on Saturdays also, usually in the morning.
Yep. Saturday mornings, practice starts at 9, racing at 10. And Wednesday evenings they race. Tuesdays they have practice. Tuesday evenings,
not bad. Because I always know I've done the double there where you race Daytona in the morning and then you can race Orlando in the evening.
Right. Yep.
How often do you do the double?
Hardly ever.
Oh, really?
Yeah. If anything, I Saturdays you can actually race Daytona in the morning, St. Augustine in the afternoon, and Orlando at night.
Yeah.
It's, you could pretty much do all three in one day. Yeah. Wow. So I've never done that. I've done Daytona in the morning, Orlando at night, but I've never through all three of them, but I know people have.
I want to try that. I think I want to try that one. I'm going to have to come up there because I'm in Lake Worth Beach.
Okay. Yeah.
So
I'm going to come on up, man. If you do it, I'll do it with you.
Okay. We're going to have to we'll plan on that. I'm going to talk to you after. Okay.
All
right, tell me this. Grands, you won it last year.
Yeah, man. It took so long for that to actually set in. I mean, I've got friends, Drew Motley, and I'm like, it still hasn't sunk in yet. I tell him, and he's like, it will. Don't worry. And then there was a time at probably end of January, it started sinking in a little bit. And like, hey, man, I did that. I mean, I worked hard last year. 56 and over expert was a new class last year. Knowing that I was turning 56 in September, I set my sights on that. And, my goals were to get number one on both cruiser and class. One out of two is not bad.
No, not at all.
But, I had a trainer last year that I used to be on a team with, Travis Turrison. And we set our goals earlier, January last year. And, he just said, he kept saying, trust the process, and less is more. So, we kept working towards it. I got some good scores in the 51-55X that year. And then, went into Daytona, and I won all 3 days there on both bikes. Went out to DeSoto, Texas, won a couple of races out there, and then went to Rock Hill last year and won a few races there. You know, all had great competition. Texas, I had Kobe Smart. Rock Hill, I had Papa G. And then Daytona, I had John Pringle here. So, you know, it wasn't Eric Rube, but, you know, there's some good guys, you know. Yeah, so Rock Hill, as maybe you don't know, but on Sunday, I crashed in the cruiser main and slid out in the first turn, broke three posterior ribs, and then found out 2 weeks later that I had two blood clots in my arm.
Wow.
So that's 1 week prior to going to the Grand. So they put me on blood thinners, and yeah, I didn't know if I was going to be able to race the Grands. I was in pretty bad shape. Didn't get to train from Rock Hill all the way to the Grands. So, like, I rode my bike twice. And that was to the latter of the 4 weeks that I had off. But, you know, it's funny. I listened to your podcast with Chris Kennedy when he won the NAG One title. And I remember him saying that he took like 2 weeks off. Well, I took 4 weeks off. And I think it was the best thing that could happen to me. Because I think for me, if that didn't happen, I would have been training even harder going into the Grands. And I would have been burnt out, you know. Yeah. So. Yeah, I think it was the best thing that could happen to me. And, you know, I didn't race the Rock. I know Chris didn't do that. And I talked to Chris. It's funny, when I went to Texas, I stayed at Chris Kennedy's house and we chatted a little bit about that. And see, I don't think I'm going to race the Rock. He goes, yeah, when I got NAG One, I didn't race the Rock that year. And, you know, so I'm like, all right. So I made my mind through that. I wasn't going to do it. And it helped me heal up a little bit quicker too with the ribs. But the ribs were a big factor. The Grands, I was wearing a fly chest protector type thing and whatnot. And my gates were horrible because of it. So, but you know, the end turnout, like you stated, worked out well. And Sunday in the main, winning that thing. Yeah, it was pretty crazy.
Maybe your body just, and your mind just needed that break to be able to heal and refocus, that even though you went into Grands with a sore body, you were still able mentally to be able to focus, to do what you had to do.
Yeah. I had a fresh mind. And again, my coach, Travis Terson, was there racing as well. Unfortunately, he had a little mishap, but he was there for support and definitely telling me, he goes, you know, you've worked hard all year. Just go out there and do what you know how to do. And it's kind of what I did. You know, I came out of the gate and I, you know, knew I had a decent gait, but it wasn't as good as it could have been. I saw Eric in front of me and, I was in third coming out of the first turn, and I was getting pretty, you know, felt pretty good on the rest of the track at the first rate, just because of my rib that, you know, it just felt it wasn't getting down the first rate as fast as I'd like to. So, yeah, I knew I was getting down the second and third straight really good. That's kind of my more, I don't know, forte, if you will, train, you know, jumps, manualing, rhythm sections. So anyway, that's what I worked on in practice on Wednesday too. So, going down that second straight, I was able to pass and get into second. I saw Eric in front of me, and going down the third straight, I made a little mistake right off the bat. But then I caught back up and I saw Eric make a little mistake. He went left, and I knew, you know, I saw him go right to the right to block the inside. And I knew right when he did that, it's going to put him up high in the last turn. And I went out left and then kind of swung out. And it's a funny story because I've told Eric this, and I learned the move that I did on him from him directly in 2018, Sarasota National. I just started racing nationals again. And you know, I said, let me go see how I do here. And I find myself in front of Eric Rube, right? And I haven't raced nationals in 100 years. And he kind of went wide, and then he squared up the corner in the second turn in Sarasota. He got in front of me, and then I couldn't go anywhere, you know? So I told him I learned the move from him. At the end of the day, we were kind of laughing about it.
Wow. Did you have to, because of your sore ribs coming out of the gate, did you have to change anything with your start in order to compensate for that?
I didn't. I didn't change anything. I just couldn't throw my weight as hard, or couldn't push as hard, you know, because I definitely felt him, you know. I was taking a lot of ibuprofen, trying not to feel him, but I was still feeling him.
Yeah. Outside of what everything that happened past the finish line, how did you feel? How did you feel crossing that line knowing you had just won Grands? Because that doesn't happen for everybody.
So you may or may not have seen when I was on the gate prior to Charlie falling over. I was kind of standing in the back, pointing to my back of my jersey. My mom passed in 2022, right, and she was pretty much everything in my life. My dad died when I was three, so my mom brought me up. She, you know, when I got into BMX in 1982, she bought me my first bike, and she was, you know, a volunteer at our local track, and, you know, she was a big part of my BMX life, if you will. And when she passed, it was pretty brutal. I'm an only child, so it was, you know, it took a lot on me. At any rate, I said Posey, which was her nickname, on my back of my jersey, and 420 was the day she passed away. And, you know, just I kind of put it all together. And that's my that's my USA BMX number is 420 as well.
Yeah.
Kind of a surreal moment when I crossed the line thinking about her and my accomplishments and just, you know, knowing that she was there with me when I crossed that line, and that, you know, I kind of put my head in my bars and, you know, kind of taking it all in the moment. And I didn't know what was going on, obviously, with everything else. But, you know, John Pringle and Drew Motley came over and they're picking me up and we're celebrating and whatnot. And then, you know, Eric came over and, you know, congratulated me and, you know, said, hey, there's still somebody down on the track. And I didn't know anybody had fallen. So I immediately put everything down and went out and saw it was Papa G. And, you know, there's like a lot of people out there. And I just kind of said, hey, man, you all right? He's like, I think I will be. And he's coherent stuff. So kind of walked back off the track and, you know, again, talking to John, Drew and Eric. And I still didn't know what happened in terms of the drama. you know, I was just in my own thing and, you know, I was excited and went up to get my trophy at the top of the thing. And it's funny story is, you know, in the 80s, I grew up watching Richie and Ronnie Anderson. I was big fans of both of those guys. And Ronnie was actually at the track. And earlier that week, I was talking to him and stuff. And I had never talked to the guy before. And he sees me. He goes, hey, man, you just won the grands. You know, you beat these legends. And, you know, I'm like, hey, you know, thanks, man. I appreciate it. So we took some pictures and whatnot. And, you know, just a great guy and just, it was just a great surreal moment. Like it took me about 45 minutes to get back to the profile trailer with all my stuff because everybody just congratulating me and just, you know, it was so, I don't know. It was just kind of weird into being in that moment, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah. It's kind of like you started racing, what, 82?
82. So 81, I was introduced to BMX from a good friend of mine, Paul Abbott. We called him Pez. And Pez raced already, and he brought me to one of, well, him and our local bike shop, Steve Dombeck at Silver Wheels Bike Shop, took us to Farmington, Connecticut, where I grew up in Connecticut. But yeah, it was in a dump. And I remember watching my friend Pez race, and he raced Mike Savage, and Savage was racing for champion at the time. And, you know, I kind of got hooked, and then we went down to Jersey City Armory. There was an indoor track there and we went down there once and checked it out. And I told my mom, I said, man, I want a bike. And so she got me a bike. And then the following year, there was a track that opened up in my local town in Torrington, Connecticut, called Twin City Raceway. And that's where I got my feet wet, so to speak.
Wow. Did you race a lot when you first started?
I did locally only though. So we had, I was trying to think of how many tracks we had then. We had South Windsor, Twin City, Meriden, Trumbull, and Bethel, I believe were the tracks at the time. And I'd probably race two or three times a week.
Well, that's not bad.
Yeah, no, it was good.
Wow. Did you ever go up into the New York, New Jersey area to race also in Pennsylvania?
Sure. Yeah. So New York for sure. And in Massachusetts, New York, we used to go over to Poughkeepsie because those guys would come over to our track because it wasn't too far away. And I remember Renato Pistolisi, Alto, he'd come over. He was actually racing B-Pro and he'd come over to Twin City and Charlie Schaller and his wife, Diane, that ran the track. You know, Renato wouldn't have any money, but his parents owned a pastry shop. So he'd bring a bunch of pastries and they'd let him race for the day.
That's a pretty good trade off.
Pretty good trade off. Heck yeah. But we used to go over there too. And I remember my competition in New York was like Kenny Pasco and Randy Greco and guys like that. So, and you know, I'm friends with Kenny still, and he's got a place down here in Florida. And he's getting back into racing this year. So it's going to be fun, man.
That's not bad. Tell me this. Did it take you long to progress? And were you a natural when you first got on the bike?
I was not a natural for sure. No, it took me a while. I think it was 84. Yeah, 1984. I started really kind of coming into my own. I was a racing expert, and we had a local race at Twin City Raceway, and Big E, Eric Bartolus, and Todd Corbett showed up.
Oh, I know that name.
The local track, because we had a national coming up that weekend in Guilford, Connecticut. And they showed up at my local track, and, you know, I won the first moto, and they kind of, you know, I remember Todd was riding for Torker at the time, and he was national 16. And I thought, man, I just beat this national 16 guy. Maybe I should start doing nationals in my own brain, you know?
Yeah.
So I talked to my mom to let me race Guilford that weekend. And I was, you know, I didn't say anything. When I beat him that day, he didn't say anything to me. And, you know, next moto, of course, Eric Bartolus takes me out. So Todd wins, and, you know, the whole fun stuff that we had going on. But that weekend in Guilford, I was in fourth in the semi, going to make the main and expert when I first national. And Todd Corbett took me out.
Damn.
So the next day, that's back when NBL nationals, when you had a national in one town, and then the next day was another town. I don't know if you remember those days or not,
but no.
That's what they call it, the War of the Stars. So it was Guilford, Connecticut on Saturday. Sunday, I was like 2 hours away, Middletown, New York. So I talked my mom into racing, let me race Middletown, New York, because we weren't planning on doing that. So we drove, slept in the car, raced Middletown, New York the next day. And I was in fifth in the semi, and Corbett was in front of me. And of course, I, you know, had to take him out. So
return the favor.
Yes, sir. So TC and I never have been friends, but, you know, yeah, good dude though. I know people that are friends. I talked to Eric a lot still, Bartolus. I mentioned the story to him, and he's, man, I remember that, but I remember it.
Not bad. Back then, tell me this. Were you more of a power guy or a skill guy?
I'd say more of a power guy. I got skills later on, and that was more towards the 90s that I started getting skills. So I stopped racing like 85, 86, and I got more into music, and I started learning how to play guitar and end up joining a band and whatnot. And then 89, I'm getting married. So 1990 is when I kind of started getting back into BMX. Greg Plaskett, I don't know if you know Roger Plaskett, his dad, is the Hall of Fame. He was an announcer for NBL for many, many years. And him and Linda Dorsey were kind of a team. Roger Plaskett, he had passed away a few years back now, but he was inducted in the Hall of Fame. But Greg's the one that kind of got me back into BMX. And we're racing in Bristol, Connecticut. And then I met, through my work, Joe Doherty, DDR.
Yeah.
But, you know, he started working at the same place as I did. And he had DDR. And then, you know, I started riding for him. And that was early 90s. And then we started going to nationals together and whatnot. And it was fun. I wasn't able to get to too many because I was, like, again, married and having kids and whatnot. So I did what I could for a few years, and then I turned pro in the late 90s. But at Joe's house, Joe Doherty had trails in his backyard. So that's where I learned to get some skills. I wasn't that great, but I got some skills.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so tell me this. You come back in the 90s. How old were you at that time?
So in 1990, I was 22. So I raced 22, 23. Yeah, 23. So. Anyway, so I just raced, I think it was like 18 over expert, then it was 24 and over expert, then I think it turned 30 and over expert. It was just kept going up and up, and here we are 56 and over now, so it's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
You know? But and I think about that, and here's the reason, I see the reason for having that age group, but back then I see how it, you know, went, kept going up, because, you know, you look at the guys, myself, Eric, Pete Lankarvich, Charlie Williams, you know, Drew Molly, all those guys, right? Like all these guys, as we keep getting older, we raced in the 80s, and, you know, the progression has gotten a lot better. The tracks are better. Oh, we're clipped in now. you know, we're actually training, which we never did in the 80s. We just rode our bikes. But I think that there's a need for this class. I really do. Some people don't think it is, but I think there is. I mean, we're able to bring guys like Turnell Henry and all those guys, you know, to keep racing. You know, imagine North having to race 18 and over experts still, you know, it just wouldn't happen, you know? So, yeah, so that's kind of, you know, so like I was 23 years old and racing BMX. And then I think it was 1998. I was riding for SC Racing at the time and Perry Kramer got me on the team. And I just said to myself one day, I went, you know what? I don't want to ever say I never turned pro. So I decided to turn pro. I was 30 years old and I turned pro.
Wow. Okay, that's a little, that's a little late, isn't it?
It's a little late bloomer, but you know what? I said, you know what? I'm gonna try this and do it and see just what happens. I didn't know how much longer I was gonna race, you know? So I turned pro and SC was supportive of that. And, you know, I did well. I didn't win any races, but definitely made money on weekends and made mains and, you know, got some recognition there. And, you know, it was fun while it lasted. And then I remember, I think I was like 35 and I'm like, you know what? I can't even compete with these guys anymore. So I went up to Rye, New Hampshire. It was an NBL national. And I talked to Bob Tedesco about turning back. He goes, well, why do you want to turn back, Tom? I said, well, because I'm 35. I don't, you know, I'm not racing as much as I used to. So he decides, okay, that's fine. He has me fill out all the paperwork.
Yeah.
And he goes, you know, you're gonna have to wait. I think he said a year. I had to wait a year to race, you know, and I was like, I forget what time of year it was, like August, I think it was. And I said, okay, yeah, whatever it is, no worries. So I signed all the paperwork and, you know, they're practicing and whatnot. And all of a sudden I hear my name called to the NBL trailer. I get down there and Bob's like, well, we got a little situation, Tom. He goes, we'd like you to race pro today. I'm like, well, Bob, I just turned back to amateur. Why do you want me to race pro? I said, I don't even have a bike with me. My son's racing. I'm not racing. He goes, well, we can get you a bike to race. He goes, we don't have enough riders and they want to have a pro race. I said, okay. So he goes, Terry Sonner is going to pay for your racing. She was Dan's comp team manager. And Timmy was there. Timmy Sonner was there. So he was racing pro. I think it was Chris Keller, Alan Zalowa, and some other guy. So anyway, I ended up racing pro that day. And I was on a borrowed bike, which was Todd Sonner's Haro with a 4616 or something really hard gear.
Wow.
And London Wilmot from Bizarro let me borrow a uniform. And crazy thing is first moto, I come out of the gate and I'm going on the first straight and there's a huge crash going to the first turn and I end up winning the moto.
Oh my goodness.
So Bob kind of looks at me at the finish line, you know, typical Bob in his OP shorts and his arms crossed, looking at me, just shaking his head, looking at me. And, you know, I ended up making money that day. And I only planned on going up. My son just wanted to race one day. So we weren't planning on racing Sunday. So I told Terry, I said, hey, I'm not racing tomorrow. She's like, well, don't tell nobody. I've already got you signed up. So, you know, at least you'll be on the sheets and yeah, whatever. But that was my last race as a pro. And yeah.
Okay. Tell me this. I'm curious. A lot of people turn pro when they're younger, 17, 18, 19, in that young 20 age. Yeah. You turned pro at 30. Was it difficult or because you were already a grown man, you went in seamlessly?
We'll be right back.
Hey, quick question for you. Are you someone who wants to be fit, healthy, and happy? And what if I told you you could get your dream body by simply just listening to a podcast? I'm Josh.
And I'm KG, and we are the hosts of the Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast.
Listen, we get it. Fitness isn't easy. Carbs, no carbs.
Just stop, okay? It doesn't have to be that complicated. And that's why we made this podcast. We get straight to the facts so you can become your best you.
So the way to check us out is click the link in the show notes or search Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast on any of the major podcast platforms. We'll see you soon.
So, I mean, you think of 1999 or yeah, 99, you know, top pros like Greg Romero, I'm not going to compete with those guys, but single A pro guys, you know, I could hold my own at the time, you know, I was racing like Billy Awe and Todd Lines with single A at the time. I think he's riding for Huffy. You know, there's some really good guys in that class as well. Ryan Johnson from Warped, we're racing him, you know, there's a few good guys, like I said, and, yeah, I'd hold my own. I was making mains for sure. But, you know, I wasn't winning any mains for any play, you know, either. But, you know, most of the guys were a lot younger than I was. Yeah, for sure.
Wow. Not bad. Not bad. You end up going back, reclassifying.
Yes, sir.
That year that you had to wait, did you just practice?
Yeah, I just rode my bike. Yeah, I just rode my bike and trained and, you know, rode trails and whatnot. That's all I did for a while. And then came back and started racing and, you know, got some national NBL titles or whatever, national numbers or whatever you want to call them. And then I don't remember the year, but I remember racing in Morristown, Tennessee, indoor race. And they had like a pro NBL race, pro open type thing, open wheels. You could race cruiser, 20 inch, whatever. I didn't even race cruiser at the time. I just raced 20. And I remember going, it was on Sunday, going to the first turn, the last race. And I crashed in the first turn. And I kind of laying there, kind of assessing what happened. And the next turn, there's another crash. And like, everybody's on the ground. Like, so I'm like, I jump up going, all right, there's money involved here. Let's go, you know? Yeah. So I go to pedal and I can't pedal. And I look down and my foot was like kicked to the right. And at that point I realized, yeah, something's not right. So I kind of pushed myself out of the building, went to my truck, and I was trying to like thinking I maybe, you know, dislocated my foot or whatever. So I'm trying to reset it and just a lot of pain, and ended up finding out I broke my tib fib. So yeah, that was a little painful. So that put me out for about a year. And then I came back and I was riding trails with my son Tyler up in Massachusetts. And I just came down wrong and I broke the other tib fib like a year later.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So I was out another year. And I kind of said at that point, you know, my son was racing, you know, he was racing Joey Bradford and Nick Long and those guys. So I was taking him to Nationals. I remember being in South Park and watching Cruiser going, that looks a little safer. I'm going to start racing Cruiser. So I got a Cruiser and started racing Cruiser, but it wasn't easier. I can tell you that. You know, I had Judd Ciencio and a lot of other fast dudes that were I was racing against. And I just got into the Cruiser a little bit and stopped racing 20 inch and ended up going after a NAG title in 2011. I did, I think it was five races at the time. That's all you had to do is five races. And I did five races and ended up getting NAG 9 that year. I was pretty happy with that. That was pretty cool. And then kind of from 2012 to 2018, really didn't do much. I got back into the band thing. I was jamming with the same band I was playing with in the 80s.
Yeah.
Then I moved down to Florida. And then my wife now said, you need a hobby. So she recommended I start racing BMX again. And without Stephanie, it probably wouldn't have happened. I probably would not have gotten back into it. So I ended up going to Orlando one night and, you know, met up with Drew and, you know, we started talking and, you know, started seeing him more at races. And then, you know, I started doing the Gold Cup series and traveling with Drew because he kind of lives like literally 20 minutes from my house here. And, you know, I started traveling with him a little bit. And at the time I was riding for Standard Bikes. And, so I decided in 2019, you know, I'm going to try to go for a national title again. You know, I'll start racing nationals, see what happens. So I started off the year in Nashville, I think I went to, and I'm still on Standard. And I think it was a 3-day national. And I remember the first day I struggled, second day I really struggled, just mentally. And I was fast, but I just was not in a good mental spot for me. And I remember, the second day, Bob Coover's winning and Howard Cato was in second. And I was trying to get around Cato and he just kept blocking me. And I remember getting mad and I kind of hit him in the last turn and didn't do much, but you know, it's kind of just, I was frustrated.
Yeah.
And I remember crossing the line, is not talking to anybody. And I went right down. If you've ever been to Nashville, they have like a lake in the bottom. Yeah. Down there. And I went down there and kind of collected my thoughts and I called my wife and I said, hey, I don't know if I want to do this. I'm not in a mental spot to, you know, I just got very angry and did something that I feel really bad about. So, you know, we talked about it. And the next morning I found Howard ASAP and I said, hey man, I just got to apologize. He's for what? He didn't even know what. And I'm like, So I told him, he's like, yeah, man, no worries. You know, so
that's how it
worked. Yeah, we kind of hugged it out, and you know, we've been good buds since and whatnot. So that day at Sunday, I ended up winning the main, and I got to think that's my my focus and my ability to, you know, talk things out with my wife, obviously, to help get me into a mental state that I needed to be in to actually win nationals. And at that point, from there, it was like that rest of the year was really between that and then joining Yes, because Lisa Motley asked me to join Yes. And from there on, I think it was Louisville, I ended up getting my last national win, which was 8. You had to have 8 then. So I went into the Grands in 2019, sitting number one in Cruiser. And yeah, it was just, it was my race to lose. I remember Drew telling me, he goes, yeah, the only thing you're going to know is with a win and only win that you'll get NAC one, you know. And I said, yeah, I know. So I got in the gate. And I think I'm just really happy to be in the main.
Yeah.
And I wasn't focused on winning the main. And that hurt me. And so I came out of the gate, and I wheelied out of the gate, made bad choices there, and just kind of, and I think I got 5th and ended up NAG 4 that year. So, I mean, it wasn't bad. I'm not complaining. First year back at NAG 4 is pretty darn good.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, from there, I continued to race, and then Drew made me got me a 20 inch, and I started racing 20 inch. And I raced 2 bikes, and yeah, I was doing the whole circuit for, you know, since 2019, I've been doing this again. Yeah.
Okay, let me ask you this. I'm curious about you riding for Standard. How did that come about, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, so in Connecticut, there was a team called CMR, Commitment Mortgage Racing. That's what CMR stood for. And the guy that ran that team asked me to be on the team, and they were sponsored by Standard. So when we went to the Nationals a lot, we would pit with Rick and Jess and whatnot. And, you know, we kind of became friendly with the guys that were on the team as well. Johnny Pinsonal from Massachusetts. He was on the team. A lot of fast guys. Dougie Fresh. I don't know if you know Doug Fresh.
Yep.
He was on the team, and you know, just got to be a part of it. And then Rick just asked me one day, he goes, "Hey, man, you know, because the CMR thing was kind of going away." And he goes, I think the first thing I did, they asked me to ride for their bike shop team, because they had a bike shop at the time called Good Times, and so I rode for them for about a year. And then he kind of bumped me up to the Standard factory team.
Not bad. Not bad. Did you do a lot of nationals with them?
I did a lot of NBL. Yeah. A lot of NBL stuff. We did a lot, but, you know, South Park, usually Louisville, you know, Connecticut ones, if there's a Connecticut national. Yeah. We did a few. Now, I think Nashville we did one time. So yeah, there's a few of them that we went to. I wouldn't say a lot.
Not bad, not bad. What about the material they use for their bikes? Did it work with you? I'm curious.
So, yeah. So at the time, like I said, in the late 90s, I was riding for SE, and then 2000s when I started riding the Standard. And you know, and before that, I was riding an S&M. So the Chromoly, even when I was on SE, I rode a Chromoly. I rode the SE Assassin. So, you know, I always rode trails and so it's kind of always a leery about the aluminum. And, you know, in the early or mid 90s, I should say, I was sponsored by Iron Horse, and we had I think Billy Griggs was on that team as well, but I was riding for Iron Horse, and I kept breaking those things, man. The aluminum kept breaking.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, they kept giving us new ones, but yeah, just, yeah, the aluminum kind of made me a little unweary, if you will, in terms of at the time. Yeah. Nowadays, yeah, I ride aluminum S squared, and best bike I've ever ridden, honestly.
Not bad. What about the Yes? I'm curious of this. The design of the bike. Did you like it? Did it fit you?
Yeah. So getting on the Yes, from the Standard to the Yes, my first race on that was in Dothan, Alabama, and I won all 3 days there on Cruiser.
Holy cow.
And yeah, it was, and I had pretty good competition at that point in time too. And I remember just like going, it's the bike, it ain't me. But you know, I really liked the Yes Cruiser. Yeah, that was, and even the 20 inch that I rode, I really liked it a lot. Yeah, I rode the Type X Cruiser, and I think the first 20 inch that Drew got me was a Type X as well. And later on, I got the World Cup 20-inch. Yeah. But yeah, I liked the S bikes. Were great bikes. Really liked them a lot. Yeah,
for sure. Not bad. Now, did Drew ever try to convince you to ride the, was it the OS 20?
They asked me if I wanted an OS, but I'm old school, man. You know, I ride the 20 inches, you know.
I'm like you. The last time I was sitting down with Drew at a race, Drew was like, you know what? We got to get you on an OS. We got to get you. Nah, Drew, I'm good. No, you'll like it, Dad. I promise you. Babe, go on, Drew. Okay. Yeah. So let me ask you this. How did your S-Squared ride come about?
So going back to Daytona track, Bill Henry being the TO, his son being Ty Henry was on S-Squared. And, you know, Bill actually came up to me and said, hey, man, you know, we're always looking for new riders and I think you'd be a good fit. So at the Grands, he brought me over to talk to Aaron Dronick and, you know, and talk to them. And then, Michelle came over from Answer and she's like, yep, I can vouch for this guy. So that's kind of how it happened, you know, one of those deals. And, you know, I didn't even really know John at the time. I've heard John and Blake and whatnot. And since, you know, got a good relationship with those guys now and everything. And then, so yeah, then I think it was last year I moved from the factory team to the national team. Rachel Graves picked me up. And so I've been riding for the national team for the past 2 years now. And this will be my third year for them.
Why the transfer, if you don't mind me asking?
I think Aaron had other thoughts and they're putting a lot of more efforts into like Jack Davis and whatnot for the team. And I know Ty was talking about turning pro. So I think they're kind of more focused on trying to rebuild the pro structure for the team. I don't know the real answer, but that's kind of what I was told. So, but honestly, with the national team, you know, nothing's changed in terms of what I got for the factory. Actually, if truth be told, Rachel does a lot for me. Let's just put it that way. She does a lot for me. Yeah.
So. Not bad. God, dog. How do you think your season's gone so far?
So this year?
Yeah.
So this year, I got COVID before Sarasota. So I was recovering, so I couldn't race the national there. But I did go down to Punta Gorda there and race the national there. I won all 3 days on both bikes there. Was planning on going to Virginia, but the wife said, there's a pergola in the backyard that needs to be built. And if you can get that finished before you go, then, you know, then yeah, you can go, but otherwise you're not going until that thing's done. So all honesty, I finished that thing last night. So I didn't go to Virginia.
That's why I'm laughing.
Yeah.
No, but hey man, I respect that. Hey, happy wife, happy life.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And it's funny because, you know, it's a pretty good size pergola. It's 20 by 16. And at any rate, the top plates on it, I use 6x8s by 20s. And they're pressure treated and those things are heavy. They're about 300 pounds a piece. And I remember I carried them from the side of the house to, you know, the area I was putting them and I got them up on the sawhorses, but I'm like, all right, now how am I going to get them 8 feet up on these pillars here? Wow. And so ended up calling some friends, Paul Lingard and Drew Motley, and they came over and helped me lift those up there. Cause they wanted me to go to Virginia too. So they're trying to get me to go, but yeah, just between work and life in general, it was just didn't happen.
Not bad. I have a question for you, and I'm curious if you could answer this for me. At 56 years old, how do you feel physically?
Todd, I got to tell you, man, I do not feel 56 at all.
That's good.
I do not. Yeah, no, I don't feel 56 at all, man. I look at other people that I, you know, grew up with that are 56 and look at their lifestyle and look at their health. And I'm like, you know, I'm not talking down on it by any means, but I really feel that, you know, BMX has helped me throughout the years. I mean, even early on in the 80s, I mean, kept me out of a lot of trouble. Where I grew up in Torrington, there was enough trouble to get into, let's put it that way. And I was able to stay out of it because of BMX. You know, I always felt that if I'm going to do a sport, because I was never a sports guy in high school. I didn't do baseball, football, any of that. If I'm going to do a sport, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to consider myself an athlete and I'm going to try to eat proper. I'm going to try to do the right things, you know, and put an effort into it, you know? So, yeah, I can honestly say since 2019, that has actually amplified more. And, you know, when I moved to Florida, I'll sheepishly say this, again, I wasn't racing that much here and there prior to moving to Florida. I was in Connecticut. But when I left Connecticut to move to Florida, I weighed 235 pounds. I was not in good health. You know, I was drinking, smoking cigars, not living the best lifestyle, so to speak, you know. And
yes, sir.
You know, getting back into BMX helped me, you know, get to my fighting weight, if you will. I weigh 190 now. I fluctuate between 180, 190. But, you know, I'm lifting, I'm training, and I feel much stronger than I did 4 years ago, you know. So, yeah, I think that being 56 and still racing BMX, it's kind of a dream, man. It really is. I never thought when I was a kid growing up that I'd still be doing this at this age, right?
Yeah. Oh, I agree.
You know, I know you're from Minnesota. I don't know when you started racing, but, you know, did you picture yourself doing podcasts and still racing BMX and being a part of it?
That's a great question. I started when I was 13, 14, and I wasn't sure. I had stopped for a while, started racing road bikes and got very serious about that. And then we ended up moving to Arkansas and I got back into racing BMX and it's been full on ever since. And then the last couple of years, it's been tough because of establishing the podcast. But yeah, I don't think that I thought about that I'd be racing BMX at this age, but I'm glad I'm doing it.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I was about the same age. I was like 13, I think it was, in 82. And I remember having pictures on my wall. I tell Eric this, of Roop, Lankarvich, Griggs.
Yep.
Not racing these guys. Not racing these guys. That's the part that's just so wild to me. You know, it's like, you know, I looked up to these guys. Now I'm racing. Yeah.
and well, the thing for you though, I think is you're racing them, but you're beating them also.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the crazy part. So it's like, you know, for me to like, look at that and go, why couldn't this happen earlier in my life? Yeah. Why is this happening when I'm 56, you know? And yeah, it is what it is. And, you know, but I'll take a little something that Drew always says, you can't dictate or figure out who you're going to race. All you can do is show up and race. So it wouldn't matter if, you know, Eric and Pete and all these guys showed up or not. Whoever shows up, I'm going to race, right? Like,
right.
I mean, heck, Gary Ellis could start racing tomorrow again and, you know, come back and race 56 and over expert. And who knows, right? So, yeah, you can't dictate who's going to show up and race and be in the moto with you.
Yeah. Yeah. Has the way that you race changed from when you were young to now?
In regards to style or?
Yeah, style, the way you see a race, has it changed?
Yeah, 100%. I keep bringing up Drew because we travel so much. So we talk a lot, you know, so we'll race and then we'll recap the race on the drive home till 4 o'clock in the morning, you know? But he's been a huge help. And for me to figure out a lot of stuff that I never knew before.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying by that is like, you know, starting off in the 80s and racing, you know, I was like very timid. I was very timid. You know, I wasn't very aggressive. I mean, I can race and, you know, I wanted to win, but I was very timid. In the 90s, I was a little more aggressive. And then, you know, I think the more aggressiveness I've been has been since 2018 coming back. I really do. I think, you know, really wanting to do something in the sport has really driven me. You know, and I don't think a NAG one plate defines who you are as a person.
Yeah.
I think it defines your ability to achieve something that you've worked towards throughout the year. You know, that to me, you know, it's great having number one on my plate or on my back of my jersey, whatever. But for me, it was the work I put in last year to get where I wanted to be. So going back to your original question in terms of my style, yes, my style is much different now than it was in the 80s, 90s. and even in the early 2000s, it's definitely changed a lot.
What would you say at 56, looking at your racing, what would you say that you have to improve on? Because I think that in order to continue to be as successful that you are, you're critically looking at what you need to improve on.
Sure. I think personally, my faults or whatever you want to call them are my first. So my initial gate, first pedal is on point. It's my next 5-6 pedals that I'm working on. And actually me and my coach have been talking about this, and he really wants me to just change my whole style at this time. He's like, you're going to go slower before you go faster, but he goes, in the long run, you're going to go faster. So I'm actually working on that now, trying to adjust how I come out of the gate and that sort of thing. So, and really get into the sprint part of it.
Is it easy for you as an adult to take direction when it comes to coaching and training?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I've worked with Dominguez before. In 2019, when I was going to the Grand sitting number one, I worked with Dominguez that year. And, you know, obviously with Dominguez, you're training with other elites, other pros.
Yeah.
That was helpful. Will Grant was there, Jeremy Smith. Jeremy Smith, Souza, all those guys. And we're meeting it once a week at the Orlando track, and I'm getting on the gate with these guys and I'm riding with these guys. I was like a sponge, man. They were telling me things and I was listening to everything they were saying. And one thing that Dominguez said to me in training one day, he goes, there's nobody faster in your class than you. He goes, you have more skills than any of those guys. And I appreciated him saying that. However, the year later, he started racing me. He turned back to amateur. Luckily, though, I got some wins on him. I did beat him a few times the following year. So that was good. But Dominguez is a great guy. And, we joke a lot and we cry a lot because, he shares some family stuff with me, and I was definitely sharing some family stuff with him, with my mom and stuff. So, good coach. And, like I said, I was a sponge. I was listening to everything he said. And just things that he's told me to do when I was 2019 that I still do today.
Not bad. Do you like racing with do you like being clipped in, or would you prefer a flat pedal?
I like clipped in. I like clipped in a lot better than flat pedal. I mean, I'll do gates, practice sprints on flat pedals. But for the most part, my current coach, Travis Thurston, says, you race on clips, you practice on clips. He goes, you're not going to be riding flats ever. So I try to do it just for form, just to get the different muscles working on the flats when I do sprints. But I like the clips. I like the clips a lot.
Not bad. So you only do your sprints on flats?
No, I do my clips too.
Okay. I'm curious. Are you one of those guys that likes to, when you put a bike together, is it once you put it together, you leave it alone? Or are you a guy that tinkers with their bike throughout the entire season?
I leave it alone.
You're like, yeah, man.
Yeah. It ain't broke. Why fix it? Yeah. I mean, I'll change tires or whatever. So one of the things I've been doing is changing the back tire to change the gear. So I'll use a 175 or a 160 just to get that difference depending on the track.
So really?
I don't change the gear itself. Yeah.
Do you ride a 4416?
4316.
43? Wow. So, you're spinning, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Holy cow. So you prefer to spin over a bigger gear?
For sure.
Not bad. Is that in the sense because it saves your legs or an easier to recover?
I think if you look at a BMX track, for the most part, unless you're talking Nashville, first grades aren't really that long. So if you can get out of the gate and get that thing going quickly and get to the first turn first, you can maintain that at any race. You can maintain it. I mean, it's not, you're not going to go any faster. And if you got skills, you're going to get through the jumps pretty quick. So I don't see a reason for it. I was running a 44.16 before, but I was told to go down to 43, which I did last year, and it was a 43 all last year. Yeah. I raced Rock Hill with a 43.16.
Are you serious? Wow, you were spinning like crazy. Jeez, what's your mental preparation when it comes to a race? Do you have, I would say, I don't know if the right word is rituals when you're on the gate, but what goes through your mind?
Yeah, I've got rituals. I've got a pattern that I kind of do. So at the Grands this year, I found myself, 30 minutes before I knew I was going to go up, I'd get on the rollers for about 5-10 minutes, get a warm up, do some stretching, and then I get on my bike and I was going, I don't know what side it is, but one of the sides of the track, I'd go outside and there's like a ramp outside on the sidewalk and I would emulate myself coming out of the gate. I did a couple of times. So I'd like just do a snap, sprint down this little thing, like come out of the gate, go back up, do it again, go back in the building and go into staging. And I did that every lap at the Grands this year. So I find routines are for me, you got to have a routine. Otherwise, you got to stay focused, have a routine. And no matter what, it's just get into the lanes. And I try not to be too chatty. But, I'll talk to some people depending on what we're talking about, I know first cruiser moto, I had Pete Lenkarevich in my moto and he was sitting number one on our points. And I'd never talked to Pete before and he was behind me in staging. I got up there first and I didn't say nothing. I just got in the gate and said, I gotta win this moto. So came out of the gate and he was next to me and I got in the first turn first and I never looked back and I just, yeah.
Wow. Okay. That's pretty cool. I like that. How long do you think you'll race?
That's a great question, Todd. I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, talking to my wife last year after I won, I said to her, I spent a lot of money racing, traveling, doing what I love to do, obviously.
Yeah.
I said, I'd really like to travel and see the world with my wife, And so we've been talking a little bit about my exit plan, if you will, and racing nationals at this point. I don't think I'll ever stop racing BMX. I don't think that's in my cards by any means, but I got goals this year for the Grands and I'm going to shoot for those. And because I didn't get two NAG ones last year. So that's my goal this year.
Okay. You just answered my next question. Not bad. So two number ones, you've always got new guys coming into the class. Does it always make it that much harder?
So I think this year, I think Billy Griggs comes into our class this year. So, Billy's got some skills, but it'd be really cool to pass Billy too, or just beat him straight up. I know he's got a lot of skills though on the track and, so it's gonna be tough. I got some work to do.
Not bad. Not bad. Let me ask you this. What's the best advice you've gotten in life and do you live by it?
Best advice I've ever gotten in life. Wow. I think it's more recent that I've got this advice than early on in my life, but, just be yourself, be honest, be upfront and treat everybody the same. There's guys that I get in the gate with and I hear people say, oh yeah, I got it easy because this guy's in my mode or whatever. And I encourage those guys, there's locals here that I talk to and I try to help them as much as I possibly can, and actually I started training a guy last year. He races intermediate here in Florida. And, I've watched that guy progress so much in the past year that, sometimes he doesn't see the progression. But because, he's living it daily, right? So he doesn't see the progression. But then when I show him an old video when he was racing versus what he's doing now, like night and day, and all of a sudden it hits him. I said, but here it is. It's the work that you're putting in that is doing this, So I think the best advice is just, be humble.
Yeah, I agree. I'm curious of what you would tell yourself at 56. What would you tell your 22-year-old self?
Train harder. And, don't, I think I'd say that what I just said is be yourself, you know, because I think at the time I was trying to impress people, trying to be somebody and not be myself, you know, honestly. And, you know, always looking for that accolade from someone, and just trying to impress them, you know, and just be yourself and work hard at whatever you're trying to achieve, and it'll come.
Do you feel blessed? Yes or no, and why?
Yeah, I feel blessed. You know, every day I get to get up, live in Florida, you know, beautiful weather. It's a little chilly today, but, you know, I get to ride my bike year round. I mean, that's awesome in itself, but I'm blessed to, I've got three beautiful children, two granddaughters, a grandchild on the way. You know, beautiful wife. Yeah. Thank you, sir. I'm my wife's very supportive. She's kind of a coach in herself to me at times. She's probably my mental coach, but she'll push me. She pushes me hard to be a better person, and I'm grateful for that. So, you know, all my sponsors too. I mean, they're supportive, you know, as well. Gus at Profile he's been huge to me this year. Him and John have been helpful throughout the year, and yeah, I can't thank them enough either. So, yeah.
Talk to me about your friendship with Drew Motley. I'm a big fan of Drew. I love Drew. He's a good guy.
How do you not love Drew?
That's true.
So yeah. So I remember racing Drew at the NBL Grands one year. You know, he was my moto, and he's a big talker on the track. I don't know if you know that or not, but he's a big talker on the track. And I remember racing him at the NBL Grands one year, and you know, we were both pretty good jumpers. And we were racing cruiser, and I remember racing him, and him and I were jumping the third straight and just talking in the air and just, you know, BSing. And we really didn't know each other too well then, but we, you know, knew of each other. Right. And, you know, come back to where I moved to Florida and we start chatting here and, you know, yeah, man, if I call that guy's helped me so much outside of BMX, like I, you know, helped me with this pergola. And, you know, I got my wife a big coquina rock for the front yard that she wanted for her birthday one year. And, you know, I didn't have a truck at the time, and man, we went over and he got a truck and we put this huge rock in the back. And then we get to my house, go, how are we getting this thing out of here? You know? And so, you know, he's been there all the time for me, man. Him and Lisa both, but yeah, Drew's a great friend and a great competitor as well. So I enjoy racing him, enjoy traveling with him. I'm glad to call him a friend.
Not bad. Tom Johnson, I want to say thank you for coming on the Lane 8 BMX podcast. And it was a treat getting to know you.
Thanks, Todd. Appreciate it, man.
You got it.